All right, I think we have that under control. It's good to see you here on a rainy Sunday. I try to avoid too much history when I give a talk, and I try to avoid too much, you know, thinking and too many quotes. I'm throwing that all out the window for this particular talk. So just be aware that it might be a little thicker than typically. In my talk entitled "Capitalism is Killing Creation," there is an aberrant and oxymoronic relationship that is alive and well in the United States. It should have never been. It's a putrid and heartless combination. It's been laying out the path to suffering for a while now. It's been betraying the intention of the true American dream and stomping on those who struggle the most along the way. It has become so much of the water that we swim in that few bother to notice, few bother to name it, and few bother to condemn it. It is capitalism and Christianity together. In Kevin Cruz's book, One Nation Under God, How Corporate America Invented Christian America, he presents a carefully laid out history of Christianity's participation in the promotion of capitalism in the U.S. See, he argues that Christianity's Puritan praise for work and thrift played very strongly into a support for the laissez-faire economics where hard work was rewarded with no regulations from government. Now, I suspect that he's right. Cruz goes on to posit that Christianity ultimately wrapped itself fully up in capitalism in the U.S. in the middle of the 20th century. See, he opens his book describing what was once the far-reaching anti-capitalist outlook of most Americans. Far-reaching anti-capitalist outlook of most Americans. Now, not surprisingly, you see, after the bleakness of the Great Depression, the average American harbored a strong mistrust of capitalists. After all, it was the greed of the wealthy capitalists that got them where they were. And the U.S. was, at that point, the U.S. was ripe for the installment of some form of democratic socialism where the playing field was more leveled and where core values of loving your neighbor and helping those in need were more readily reflected. Now, being that hindsight is 2020, you should probably not be surprised to learn that many of America's wealthiest began to worry about some form of a populist movement popping up and ruining the great gig that they had going so far. So, they looked to their strongest resource, money. And they did what capitalists do so well. They bought an answer to their problem. In this case, the answer looked like a man by the name of Reverend James W. Fifield, Jr. Now, he was a Congregationalist minister who in today's world would probably be thought as a minister of the prosperity gospel. Basically, he was the Joel Oldsmith of his time. He made crazy amounts of money by telling wealthy Christians that their wealth was proof of their goodness. God was rewarding them. After all, God helps them that help themselves, right? Fifield was key. He was key in combining Christian thought with the emerging economic growth after the Great Depression. He started an organization called Spiritual Mobilization. Spiritual Mobilization. In order to take that message to a larger populace than just his own wealthy congregation. Now, the organization's goal was to destroy the growing Christian support for any kind of welfare state and to, instead, promote a new perspective of Christian libertarianism. As one writer put it, Spiritual Mobilization, his organization's name, sought to influence the ministers across this country, and with its bottomless monetary resources, it was doomed to success. Cruz's account is startling in part because of just how vulgar the whole affair was. Christianity was rented out quite consciously to buttress a shambling narrative about the continued dominance of a moneyed class in a performance that even Karl Marx would have found blunt. As the middle of the 20th century approached, this organization, Spiritual Mobilization, circulated literature touting the righteousness of the libertarian Christian gospel, and the stew of supply-side economics, small government, hardcore U.S. patriotism, and Christian rhetoric was entirely novel at the time and smashingly effective. But, there is nothing Christian, nothing spiritually satisfying, nothing morally upright about that sordid relationship. It is uncaring, it is unbiblical, it is inhumane, and it is killing creation. In his dictum entitled Evangelii Gaudium, The Joy of the Gospel, Pope Francis puts it this way: we can no longer trust in the unforeseen forces and the invisible hand of the market. And then he goes on to call for a redistribution of wealth and reform of economic structures that would ensure greater equality of income and opportunity. The rich, he says, should share their wealth, and even calls for a new commandment saying, today we also have to say, thou shalt not, to an economy of exclusion and inequality. Confucius puts it this way: the superior man understands what is right. The inferior man understands what will sell. Sri Lankan economist and practicing Buddhist Neville, and I'm going to mess up his last name, Karunatilake, once wrote that a Buddhist economy system has its foundation in the development of a cooperative and harmonious effort in group living. Selfishness and acquisitive pursuits have to be eliminated by developing man himself. See, the reality is that most, if not all, spiritual practices and teachings stand over and against systems that allow for a small group of people to hold the majority of wealth while the majority of people suffer. Sadly, though, as Israeli historian Yuval Noah Harar says, the history of ethics is a sad tale of wonderful ideals that no one can live up to. Most Christians do not imitate Christ. Most Buddhists failed to follow Buddha. And most Confucians would have caused Confucius a temper tantrum. In contrast, he says, most people today successfully live up to capitalism, consumerist ideal. The new ethic promises paradise on condition that the rich remain greedy and spend their time making more money, and that the masses give free rein to their cravings and passions and buy more and more. This, he says, this is the first religion in history whose followers actually do what they are asked to do. Capitalism is a spiritual crisis. It should be no surprise that we now print "In God We Trust" on our money, because it would seem that money is the only God in which we trust. And sadly, Sadly, it's a blind and false trust, for the capitalism which it represents does not want the best for us, nor does it have aspirations to improve our spiritual lives or otherwise. The capitalism that it represents, the power that it measures, the God that it emulates, wishes for nothing more than to create a God class, a class of society to which the rest of us are subservient and must obey, a ruling class who can afford to live outside of the destruction and ruin that they are creating, while the rest of us toil amidst the muck with the false belief that things will get better. This is not some dystopian view of the future. This is an open-eyed reading of most of the world's current reality. And there is nothing good or kind or loving or spiritual about it. You see, while capitalism has generated incredible wealth for a tiny portion of this world's population, it has taken an already devastating toil on the planet, and it's failed to improve the well-being of the vast majority of humanity. If anything, it's done the opposite of that. Not only that, because of the uncontrolled or regulated impact of capitalistic pursuits, species are going extinct at a rate of 1,000 times faster than that of any natural rate over the previous 65 million years. 1,000 times faster. Every year, 18 million acres of forest are lost. That's the size of Panama. The richest nation in the world, here in the U.S., 15% of the population live below the poverty line. All thanks to the impact and outfall of allowing capitalism to become the god of most Americans. Now, at this point, you may be thinking that capitalism and global sustainability are incongruous with one another. And you'd be right. As a matter of fact, a recent paper that's been prepared for the UN's 2019 Global Sustainable Development Report backs you up on that kind of thinking. See, we have to remember that the primary issue at the heart of the crisis of climate change is the very way in which we produce things globally, and that it's tied deeply into the core of capitalism, which is profit over sustainability. As long as we choose to continue operating out of that myopic understanding of economics, the crisis will continue, and given its progressive nature, it's only going to get worse. In that UN paper, scientists argue that worsening climate change is having a drastic impact on the ecosystems and biodiversity and the systems, and that systems of unchecked capitalism like rising inequality. They like it. They like unemployment and debt is also contributing to the destabilization of society. And in order to guarantee, they believe, that humanity is able to have a good quality of life on Earth for future generations, well, the paper's authors argued that new economic systems will have to be created rather than the standard band-aid approach governments have taken in the recent past. Put it plain and simple, capitalism is at fault. Spiritually minded people, particularly those claiming to be Christians, should be at the forefront of the effort to impact the necessary change. Without it, creation will be lost. As I said, capitalism is a spiritual crisis. Does what we claim with the way we lead our lives match what we say matters to us spiritually? Now, we don't need to beat ourselves up over the answer to that question. The reality is, in today's world, particularly living under the constant impact of capitalism in the U.S., any American who's even being halfway honest with themselves has to answer no to that question. No matter how much we want to have our spiritual confessions match with our lives' actions, the only way to exist and participate in a consumer-oriented society is to not always live into our spiritual confessions and expectations. Which is exactly why we must work for change. We must work for a society that's structured in a way that promotes our ability to care for people. A society that enables us to lift up the founding concept that all are created equally and should be treated that way. A society that values sustainability, not just of resources, but of humanity over profit. Now, because of the way that our nation is structured, this will necessarily be a political pursuit. This will necessarily be a political pursuit. Like Christianity was used at the earliest stages of embedding capitalism as a god in the U.S., we must use spirituality, morality, and our humanity to change our nation's economic practices towards the health, well-being, and inclusion of all people. It means becoming even more active in the political process. It means being more vocal about systems that will sustain creation and life. It means being willing to engage in civil disobedience when unjust laws are promoted. It means actively divesting from stocks that promote division, mass consumption, and inequality. It means actively supporting companies who promote a fair wage and civil rights. And it also means actively avoiding those who don't. Now, this list could go on, and there is no way that all of us could do all of them. But all of us can do some of them. But the one thing we all can do, the one thing we all must do, is vote. That is currently our real path to change. It begins locally and it extends nationally. That is where the change we need begins. It begins with an educated populace showing up at the polls and voting for sustainability, voting for the welfare of all people, voting for the basic human rights and dignity of all people, voting for a system that values creation and all of humanity, which depends on it. This is your opportunity to share any thoughts that you have about today's talk. Are there those who have thoughts they want to share with the community?
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. And it's always occurred to me that I guess we could say that capitalism is expressed through corporations in a lot of ways. That's how it's operationalized. And our corporations, apparently the main thing they're supposed to do is make a profit. If we could insert a second goal, which is to preserve the planet.
Be sustainable.
Make it sustainable, then we would have some more leverage on the whole thing. So I think that's one of the issues.
Dynamic Dua. Hi, good morning. I'm Elsie. China is not capitalistic and very destructive.
True.
So you can have...
There's an exception to every rule.
There can be many motives for ignoring sustainability. It's a concept that human beings actually have never had.
Fair enough. Are there others?
Yeah, I'm Danny. A long time ago, probably about 45 years ago, I attended a meeting of long-distance hikers in a little town just off out of Princeton, West Virginia. And the gentleman had founded, not the hikers meeting, but the facility we're using there, which is basically one building, two bathrooms that didn't work, and a large open field for observing or meeting, was he founded that because he'd seen what had been happening with four whites pitted against four blacks. Even when I was growing up, my mother, I saw that. She was working in the mill for a nickel an hour. And the thing that was used to keep her there was black people take your job or black people are bad. That seems to be a theme that's even relevant today, that the racial issue, we have to blame the other people or we won't be able to keep our own wealth and our own status.
Mm-hmm. Malcolm X says capitalism is racist.
Thank you for your talk, Mark. I was sitting at Starbucks this morning before I came over here, and I pulled out a piece of paper that a friend of mine, a Sierra Club friend of mine, gave me at the Sierra Club meeting Tuesday night, and I was reading through it. It's about styrofoam. And I'm just going to read you two things from this piece of paper. Every day, almost 1,400 tons of styrofoam is buried in U.S. landfills. Not from this piece of paper, but on a related note, every day in this country, 500 million plastic straws are thrown away. Again, from this paper, on average, Americans throw away 25 billion foam cups a year.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing that. Are there others? There you go. They can be. Are there others?
I'm George. And I'm a Sierra Club member, too, have been for decades. But I'm not convinced that capitalism couldn't be reined in some way that we could have both capitalism and sustainability. I think that's where government comes in.
Right.
And that's why we...
Absolutely. Are there any others?
Well, it occurred to me that one thing you could follow up on is this prosperity gospel history.
Right.
Sounds like that's a real...
I think he would be looked at as possibly the founder of it.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Reverend Feifel. That was shortly after the Great Depression. I don't have the exact year, but it was very shortly after we started seeing an economic upturn after the Great Depression.
But I want to put a plug in for the Ehrman lecture that we're going to hear in Europe today. It was on 1 Peter, which has discussion about Christians feeling persecuted. And that ties in, I think, with some of this.
It absolutely does, yeah.
My understanding, Mark, is that the Great Depression ended only because we started and had World War II.
There's definitely the correlation.
And I also understand that when the war was going, that the government said the way to mobilize people is to go to the top corporations and get them to mobilize, to build planes and bombs and whatever. So
right.
We get that tie-in right there.
Absolutely. I'll turn it back over to you.